This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors in our lives, and when we get sober, they can almost feel magnified at first because we're adjusting to feeling all our feelings again rather than using alcohol to numb them. I was honestly really surprised when I got sober at how many emotions came up for me. I remember literally saying, I have so many feelings right now, and it felt really overwhelming having to feel them all. But the great thing about that is that it gave me the clarity and awareness that I had some things to work through, like people pleasing and like my own self-talk. That's where therapy can be so helpful, because it's a safe space to get things off your chest and begin to work through what's been weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. What I really love about BetterHelp is that it's entirely online. All you have to do is fill out a questionnaire and you'll be matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime with no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/happiest today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/happiest. You guys know I'm all about making our lives as easy as possible in sobriety. Well, you can eat stress-free this spring with Factor Meals, and they're offering my listeners 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month with code HAPPIEST50. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted and dietitian approved. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options plus more than 60 different add-ons. What I love so much about Factor is that I've never been someone who makes time for cooking, but with Factor, I have delicious meals ready to go and on the table in just 2 minutes, so I can get back to doing what I want with my time without the hassle of any prep, cooking, or cleanup, a total godsend. Factor's also celebrating Earth Day all month long, so look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/happiest50 and use code happiest50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code happiest50 at factormeals.com/happiest50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Happiest Sober Podcast. I'm here with everyone's favorite guest.
Manny's favorite guest. Hi, Annie.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Oh, can we just say off the top, the last episode we did together,
yeah,
you were like, I get you back in 3 weeks. Little did I know,
yeah,
you were what? Two, three days away from getting on a plane. That's to right. Surprising me.
That's right. That was fun, eh?
Yeah. So I was 3 weeks away from coming home.
I know. I was like having such a giggle inside doing the, see, I get you back in 3 weeks, knowing I was coming.
Oh my God. For anyone who doesn't follow along on my Insta stories, my whole family flew out and surprised me in Denver, and we had the best weekend. But I know, and I said to you on that call when we weren't recording, I was like, I started having this like chaotic thought that like maybe like my sisters are gonna come surprise me or something. Yeah, but like, yeah, then she said this, so I don't think it's happening. I got my hopes up for a second. Little did I know you were all coming.
You know, I loved that you said that though, because I was like, oh my God, the power of our own intuition. Like, we always know, even when we think we don't know something. Like, it's just so funny to me to see we get these little hits of knowing our something, our gut, right? That little gut instinct. And then it's easily dismissed. But you knew, you knew something.
Yeah.
You,
right? I had a gut feeling something
so
was
funny.
Yeah, I know. but I will say, I never thought you and Jack were coming. I would have thought my sisters would come and surprise me, but all of you coming.
Yeah, I know.
I could cry just thinking about it again. Yeah. I know. But oh my gosh, I'm super pumped for this. And we were talking amongst ourselves of like, what are we going to talk about this week? And I pulled up, I had put on my question box months ago, like, what are some topics you want to hear us talk about? And someone said, let me pull it up. Someone said, I'd love to hear more from your mom on raising daughters to help them navigate alcohol. Mm. And we've talked about this like a little bit.
Yeah.
Of how you navigated it, whether you would do it that way again, whether you would do it differently. Mm-hmm. I feel very conflicted as someone who wants kids someday but doesn't have them. I don't know how I'm going to handle the alcohol stuff. But why don't we give like a background I feel like we have to give a background on how you did handle it and the why, because we were in a pretty unique situation where you didn't let my sisters and I drink in high school. I squeaked by on the last year of high school because I was the baby. But it was such a unique situation because none of us broke that rule. And no
I
one that
know.
you told believed you when you would say,
No,
like, none of them drank. They were like,
I
yeah, okay, that's what you think. But
Okay,
really, none
naive
of
little mother. Yeah.
Yeah, but none of
Yeah.
us went against that. But do you want to give a little background, Mom, on how you navigated as a sober parent, where our dad was very not sober, how you navigated those conversations and kind of your thought process and kind of the background story, I guess, behind it?
Yeah. So, gosh, I haven't had a lot of time to think about this.
I know.
We just
We're
kind of
doing this
said,
one on
let's
a
talk about
whim.
this.
I know.
So, I mean, well, I don't really have a lot of time to think about a lot of the questions you asked me. So, anyways, what did, okay. So, I was, as I think I've stated before, my own train wreck during high school teenage years. And I was also in the midst of my own train wreck in my marriage with your dad, drinking again. And
Who
which,
and he was sober when you guys got married, and
yeah.
then he relapsed when I was 8.
Right. And so in that moment, the we separated. And it wasn't just like he relapsed. I was like, you're
Yeah,
out.
there
There
was a
was a
lot more.
lot of years of stuff, prior to that, but that was sort of like a very defining moment for me.
That was the line in the
And
sand for you.
And so just because I grew up with a father who drank, and I didn't want that for you. If he was gonna start drinking again, I didn't want you girls to have to live through that on a day-to-day basis, in the home. And so my decision was for you girls to not drink, to have that hard line, because I was not a mother with rules, right?
Yeah,
There was
that's the
just
funny thing. That was your rule,
that
really.
was my one rule, that nobody was gonna drink.
Yeah.
And I think too, the reason everybody followed that rule, I think, was you were all witnessing what it was like. I mean, you could see, your dad's struggle. And so I think really what happened, because there was so much kind of chaos in our lives, we were just a house full of girls. And I think your dad being in the throes of addiction really created kind of a circle the wagons mentality between the four of us, like you three and
Yeah.
me. It just sort of really cemented this deep bond that I don't think would have happened. I think if I tried to implement that, that rule, if I was married to your dad and we were just going through life in a normal, marriage, I don't know how successful that would have been. But I think the chaos that was, his relapse, his drinking, created something different. So everybody abided by that rule. You three all did. But mostly for me, it was really motivated by not wanting you to make the mistakes I made as a teenager drinking, right? I think I had so much shame for so many things I did through my teen years, that I know I wouldn't have done if I wasn't drinking. And I just felt like the teen years, high school, is so much to navigate anyways. And if you don't have to have that added piece on top, I just felt I didn't want that. And here's the other thing, I didn't want to deal with it. Like, I think too, I was a single mom and I felt so vulnerable. Like, if my kids get into trouble, what's going to happen? Like, what does that look like as me as a single mom? Is this going to give, anybody grounds? Not that your dad was in any kind of shape really to do anything about anything or pay attention to what was going on in our home. But I think I felt really vulnerable. Like, oh, what if something happens? What if someone says you're not a fit mother and you can't have your children anymore? I mean, I think that was always kind of in the back of my mind. So there were some things that I think drove that decision for me. But mostly it was, I really wanted you to. So we talked a lot about alcohol. So it wasn't about don't ever drink, but it was about when you're old enough to drink, when you're the legal age, I wanted you to do it really consciously, to be able to notice, I'm going to have a drink. How am I going to feel? Oh, what happens when I have a drink? What happens when I have another drink? Do I notice I've had too much? Do I notice if I have a cutoff point? Like, I really wanted you to be conscious about your decision making around drinking. And I felt like you had a better chance of doing that the older you were versus 13, 14-year-olds
Which
who are,
is
right?
true. Like, well, the younger you start, I mean, because it's progressive, and because when you're that little, your brain is still like it's not even fully formed yet. Like, I think that really does shape things if you wait until you're older. I mean, hey, it didn't stop the inevitable for me, but.
But it saved you some,
I'm sure it saved me some high school
angst.
trauma, knowing how much alcohol affected me, even in my 20s and when I was older, like university. Especially, you know what, too, mom, like thinking of my high school experience. And it's funny, I just had in last week's episode, I had Kelly Yu on, and she asked me, like, what kind of kid were you? Like, were you a really confident kid? Were you like, and I was, as a kid, I was a very confident, outgoing, loud kid, but when I really got insecure and went in my shell was high school. And knowing how I felt in high school on a day to day, how insecure I was, like all of that in my high school years, when I imagine if I had drank in those years, well, wait, I did in grade 12. So I did at the end, I did at the very end of high school. But I was in a different place. I think that actually, when I started drinking at the end of high school, was when I had come out of my super insecure phase. Like, I think for the first 2, even 3 years of high school, I was so self-conscious. And then part of even why I started drinking at the end is because I think was in a bit of a different place. I think I was more confident. I had like made new. Sort of a new group of friends with like the guys through the guys started dating, like you know, all of that. But when I think of like my earlier high school years, if I had drank, like, oh my God, I don't want to imagine it.
I think it would have been bad news.
But I'm curious, mom, like, when I think back to, I don't know, being a kid. I don't remember ever learning, and Cassie said this when she came on too. I don't remember ever learning that you were sober or like that alcoholism runs in our family. It was just something I always knew. Like it was just always a fact for me. So how did you navigate those conversations when we were like little?
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like it was kind of the same thing. Like, I never knew. There was never a moment that I could remember where I was sat down and told I was adopted. It's
I
just
thought of
something,
that as I was saying
right?
it. You always
It's
knew.
just something I always knew. There was no moment of kind of not knowing and then knowing. And I think it's because my mom talked about it from the time she brought us home from the children's aid, right? Like, this idea that you're chosen, she'd read little books about being adopted. I just think it was probably part of conversation all the time from the time you were little that you would have just heard about, right? That's all I can think of it, Maddie. Like, I think it was just such a natural part of my life, of who I was, that you would see in any kind of social setting or interaction, whether it was with neighbors, whether it was family gatherings, like you would always see or know or observe that I'm the one that's not drinking and everybody, you know what I mean? It's one of those things I
Yeah.
think you just are learning through observation and maybe hearing conversation. So it wasn't ever a big sit down. Okay, let me tell you.
Yeah, just naturally. Do you
Yeah.
did we used to did we used to ask you questions about it much?
I don't think so. Not that I remember a lot. Like I can't, like I don't remember specific questions, or like about my drinking until you guys got older. And certainly I think when your dad's drinking resumed, then there would be questions, conversations about that. But
Did you feel unsure how to navigate that? And was it like when you decided, like, I'm making a hard rule that they're not allowed to drink in high school? Like, were you conflicted about that? Was that like just a no-brainer for you?
that was a no-brainer for me.
Okay.
And talking about it was not hard at all because I grew up with a mom who was an Al-Anon lady. She had always gone to Al-Anon. And so she talked to me when I was growing up about the importance of keeping it an open conversation about always talking about it, that there's nothing to be ashamed of, that like secrets grow in the dark, they stay powerful in the dark. And so she really gave me permission, right, to ask questions, to talk about it. And I always remember she said to me, look, like, she didn't know what to do about my dad's drinking. And whenever you don't know what to do, the beautiful thing about life is there's always somebody who does. And so you go and get help. So she was always an advocate and a really big promoter of go and get help. Like, there was never any feeling of shame about that. Like, that's just what you do. Somebody else knows. Somebody else has learned about it. So you go and learn what you can learn. So she was always big, and we don't ever keep secrets about it, because that also, if we do, enables the drinker, right? And you don't want, sorry, you just got emotional and just made me get
I know. Oh, whenever
emotional.
lately, whenever you talk about Granny, especially in this context, it makes me so emotional.
I know she was really a great lady.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, yeah, so I think because of that, it was just a very natural, easy thing for me to talk about and a necessary thing. Like, I would never not. I kind of remember actually, I knew some other mothers, and one person in particular really sticks out in my mind, who was like hell-bent, like, to make sure nobody ever said anything about, anything she did that might have been, like, as a teenager or any, they didn't want their kids to know anything about the wild side of their life. And I always, like, felt really strongly like, that's silly. You should, because that's such valuable information about what not to do, right? Like, oh my gosh, this is the crazy stuff I did, and it turned out terribly for me, or these were the things I struggled with, or now I know why, I wouldn't never do that again. Like, all of these things are teaching moments. So I never understood, parents who didn't want to say anything, because then I think you're also teaching shame, right? Like, ooh, it's not okay to make mistakes. It's not okay to not be perfect. It's right. For me, anyways, I just always felt it's a gift to be able to say, here I am in all my messy glory, the story of me, what I wouldn't do again. And right? Like, yeah, I find that's much more powerful, and it's a beautiful teacher. So,
Yeah. I remember what I really remember about these conversations growing up is you were definitely always open about dad and dad's drinking. And I remember also you explaining the red flags of what made your drinking problematic. The thing that always stuck out to me was that you'd always say that when you drank, you'd like get a buzz and feel so good. And then you'd get really, really sad. And then you get really angry and then you'd black out. Like that's what I remember you kind of describing how your drinking was. And talking like I always knew you went to AA at 21. And the one thing that I really remember you saying when we were high school age was that by not drinking in high school, we were learning how to socialize and become confident without like relying on alcohol for that. Like I remember also that kind of being a conversation.
Well, yeah. And that was a really critical thing to me, like an important thing to me, and like a critical point to make, because I always felt like I didn't know how to socialize. I remember really feeling like like a couple of instances where we were going somewhere, and I remember feeling like, wait, I need to have a few drinks before I go there, because I don't know how to talk to anybody. Like, I don't know what to do or what to say, but I did know that once I had a few drinks, I was good to go. And so that was another thing that I didn't want to be part of your experience. I wanted you to just learn that part, like figure that out, right? Without using alcohol to do it.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
So,
you know, it's so funny too. And I agree with that. And I love that. But it's interesting to look at the fact that, yeah, I didn't have my first drink until I was 17, which is in, you know, being here 30, that's young, but that's older than a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people start younger than that. I was in my very last year of high school. But it's interesting because although I had those years up until then of socializing, once I had a drink and felt what that feels like, then I started relying on it. I was like, oh, it's like hitting the easy button for feeling confident in a social situation. So even though I had those teenage years under my belt, once I got sober, it was something that I had to like relearn again for sure.
Right.
You know what I was just thinking, Mom? Do you think in like a hypothetical world, dad never relapsed. He wasn't drinking. We didn't have that unique family structure of like the four of us as this tight knit unit. How do you think you would have handled alcohol then? Would we have been allowed to drink in high school? Would that have still been your rule of no drinking in high school?
I think so. I do think so. I mean, that was always something I felt really, really, really strongly about.
Okay.
I just don't know if you guys would have abided by it.
Would have listened.
Right? Like you might have just been really normal teens and said, screw you. I'm doing it behind your back. You might have been rebellious, right? So, I mean, I don't know, but I still would have come at it that way.
Yeah.
I still would have come at it that way. I did feel really strongly about that. But funny enough, like, which we've talked about, you know, on the other side of it, I've often wondered, like, oh, was that the wrong call?
That's what I was just going to ask. So this is something I'm so fascinated to talk about, because we've talked about this a couple times since I got sober, is that you look back and feel conflicted. Like,
what, I do.
Did I do the right thing? So say more about
that. I do, because I wonder, like, did I isolate? Did that create a scenario of you feeling isolated from other people? Like you not feeling part of the crowd, which would have been something that would have made your high school experience trickier, right? At an already tricky age. Like, you know, did you feel like the odd man out? Did you, you know, do you feel like, I don't get to be a cool kid? I don't, like, I don't know. So I've often thought, like, I don't know, would it have been better to just let you go for it and, you know, bite the bullet, live with those consequences and learn from them, you know? But it's interesting because I heard something recently, and of course, I can't freaking remember where it was from. I vaguely, vaguely think it was a conversation I heard or an article I read. I want to think it was Laura McCowan talking to somebody who said something about how detrimental it is to the brain, the teenage brain, to drink. And then I can't remember who said it, but when I heard that, I was like, oh, thank God. Like it gave me a little bit of relief. Right, like maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe it was actually really a good thing. So, I mean, what do we ever know? We just do the best we can with what we know.
Oh my God.
I was coming off of, I was making a decision based on my horrific experience and not wanting you guys to have that, wanting you to learn other skills. But, you know, what do you know? I mean, we don't know. We don't know how different it would have been if you had drank and if you, we can't ever know. But, you know, you do the best you can with what you have at the time. So,
yeah.
What about you? Do you wish it was different? Are you happy with how
No, it's it was? So okay. Oh my gosh, so much to say. So,
go for it.
So, it's funny, the little moment I had at the beginning of being like, thank God I didn't drink in high school, that would have been a wreck. And then being like, well, I did drink in my last year. And I do know I had anxiety from the very first time I ever got drunk, which was with high school friends in my very last year of high school. But I don't associate really going to school feeling that way. But I think that what it is that when I started drinking in grade 12, my last year of high school, I had such a tight-knit group of friends already. And I think that my first year was the most harmless. So if I also fast forward in my head 3 years, like let's say if I had started drinking my very first year of high school, like most kids at my high school did. And then grade 12, my final year was like going into year four of drinking. Like when I imagine what year four of drinking was for me, because it did like progress the anxiety, like in university, I think even in my second year of drinking was when my anxiety from it skyrocketed so much. I do think I would have been going to school on Mondays really anxious. If I had started earlier, because I was I was super insecure for most of high school. And yeah, I don't think I would have been able to cope with that.
I know. I just feel like that just ramps it up.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I think about little things that I knew or heard or observed from, you know, other friends who had kids maybe who were carrying on, or things that I heard, you know, just situations that other girls were in. I think, my God, like then they were a wreck. And I'm like, how do you navigate that kind of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? That
I don't know
of,
how I would like have been train, able to.
Emotional train wreck. And then you got to show up at school and you try, I don't know. It's,
yeah, I mean, no, it stresses
it.
Me
a
out to imagine.
People did it, but yeah, it's hard.
I think like even in my adulthood, in my 20s, I struggled so hard to cope with the aftermath of it. So when I imagine little like 15-year-old me, I'm like, thank fucking God I wasn't doing that. And I will say too, you know, it's interesting what you were saying of, you know, that what makes you feel conflicted is, did it isolate us? Like, did it make us feel like the odd one out? And I think what's so interesting, and I won't speak for her experience, but my oldest sister is she was the one out of the three of us that hung out with the group, with the party group in school. So she did have that experience of being the one in her group who wasn't drinking. And I won't, you know, I don't know what that was like for her, but I will say that her being the oldest one and then Cassie and I following in her footsteps, I felt cool because my big sister was the only sober one in her group of friends. So for me, it was something that I felt proud to say because when I was in my first year of high school, she was in her last year of high school. I'd seen her go through all of high school being like the one who didn't drink. And I was like, that's so freaking cool of her. So to me, it was something I felt proud of in high school to be like, no, I don't drink. I almost wish people asked me more because the other piece is I did not hang out with a group of drinkers in high school. I had a very tight-knit group of girlfriends, and that just wasn't what any of us did. And so I didn't have that experience of being the odd one out. And if it ever did come up, I'd be happy to get to say to get the opportunity to say, no, I don't drink. And I remember talking, I have this memory of being in, I think I was in like grade 11 math. And this girl who was in that big group of kind of partiers, it came up and I proudly said, I don't drink. And I remember her being like, oh my God, like, I don't know what I'd do without alcohol. I could never not drink. And I remember being like, okay, get your shit together.
Fast forward a few years.
So I didn't have that experience of feeling like the odd one out, but I think that was a combination of that wasn't my group of friends, and I was the youngest who watched my two sisters also not do it. So I think I felt empowered going into high school of like, ooh, I'm also going to be the one not drinking. It was like such a unique thing in our family, but I think that a big part of it, Mom, was how you talked about it with us for sure. But that being said, I feel a lot of conflicted feelings on how I'll navigate it when I have kids, because I, in a perfect world, would love for my kids to not drink until they're old enough as well, for all the same reasons you just said. Like, I don't want them to feel that anxiety or do things embarrassingly drunk in school and then be so like embarrassed going to school on Monday. Like, I don't want them to deal with that shit. I want them to be old enough. I want all the things you said. Like, I want them to find their sense of like confidence and like, you know, adjusting to socializing without it. However, I recognize that I grew up in a unique situation where I had watched, you know, your and dad separate because of his drinking. So we did have that sort of healthy respect of for that rule because of it. Yeah. So I don't want to, I think my thing is I would love for my kids to not drink, but I don't want to create something where I tell them they're not allowed, and then because they're teenagers, they're not going to listen. And I don't want to create an environment where they don't feel like they can come to me about it.
Yeah. I was going to
say,
I
don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I think like, so, you know, I was obviously drinking as a teenager. I started young, and this is the thing I think that matters. It doesn't matter really. And I think a lot of parents, you know, maybe who are newly sober, worry, oh my God, what if my kids drink? But this is what I know for sure, is it doesn't matter if they do or they don't. The only thing that actually matters is that the conversation is open around it. And so that's the thing that matters, because, you know, my mom would say to me all the time, like, I had an open, like a very open relationship with both my mom and dad. I could, you know, there was no secrets about my drinking. I mean, I was stumbling in drunk. I was a wreck. So she would say all the time, like, look, I don't agree with a lot of your choices, but I'll always support you as a person. So I might not like what you're doing, but I love you. And I support you, who you are. So I, like, I think without that open dialogue, without me being able to say to my mom, like, oh my God, this terrible thing happened, and have her listen and, you know, no judgment, no criticism, just listen and talk it through with me, how I, you know, how I was feeling, like the emotional part of it. She was always just there to listen. I mean, she didn't ever say, of course, like, oh, no problem. You know,
yeah,
don't worry about what you did. Of course, she would say, listen, I don't agree with the choice that you made, or the, you know, but let's talk about it. And so I could always banter back and forth with her about what was actually happening. And if we hadn't established that kind of relationship, that it was safe for me to talk about what was happening and what I was experiencing. And, you know, even like, you know, why I was doing what I was doing, or why I thought I was, and how was it working out for me, you know, kind of conversations, I would never have got sober as early as I did. It was all of that stuff, that turmoil and, you know, angst through my teens, and being know that I could go and talk to her about it, that also let me know that when I was really, really, really recognized, like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble, she's the first person I went to. She's the first person I ever said, I think I've got a problem. And actually, and I think I had shared this before, I had a girlfriend who had gone to my mom behind my back and said,
yeah,
I'm really worried about Megan. Her personality really changes when she drank. So, you know, my mom obviously knew for a long time that I had a problem. And so when I was really ready to say, I think I'm in trouble, I mean, that's who I went to. And then she hooked me up with, you know, someone who took me to my first AA meeting. And it wasn't like, you better go and get help ever. It was like, are you ready?
Aww.
Right? Yeah. So
oh,
I
that
think,
just got me so emotional again.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing. It's not whether your kid is drinking or not. It's whether you can hold space for them, whether you can have those conversations. Like, let me just also be clear. It wasn't like my parents were a pushover. Like, I was kicked out of the house when I was 16 because
there
I
were
wasn't
consequences.
there was, right? Like, loving consequences. And, you know, I had crossed some real lines, and it was like, look, if you're going to behave that way, if you're not going to participate as a family member here, then you need to leave. So it wasn't just like, do whatever you want, I'm going to watch you drown. Like, I mean, you know, those conversations were her also holding me accountable. I mean, she kept me out of denial, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing to be concerned about, more so than whether do I let them drink or not. It's like,
yeah,
how do I want, what do I want the tone in the house to be about it? And so, you know, for me, it was always very important to share openly what my experience was with drinking and drugs and partying, and, you know, so that you have information, right, about decisions you might make. So that's what I think.
Oh, good. I love that, Mom. Like, that's so good. Of just, it's not about the rule or the line in the sand. It's just about, like, how you talk about it and having it be an open conversation. So good.
Yeah.
And also, like you said it about Granny, and I'll say the same about you, which I always say, is that I never would have gotten sober when I did, if not for you being my mom, if not for you being sober, if not for you being open about your sobriety and all of that. Like, 1,000%, there's no way I would have at that point.
Yeah. Well, what do I say to that? Yeah. I mean,
it's
we
true.
I guess we're ready when we're ready, right? We're ready when we're ready. And so you might have been ready without me as your mom. You never know. But
it would have been
for
later,
whatever reason, I'm your mama. Perfect.
I know. Yeah. I always love to, like, it warms my heart when I hear, you know, like, people in my group who have kids, or just like anyone I chat with, like, their kids noticing the change in them. And like, I was just like, it always just tugs at my heartstrings of, like, it's, I believe so strongly it's the best thing you can do for your kids.
Yeah.
Is to be a sober parent for them.
Me too. Like, no question. You can be present in a different way. Right? Your brain's not taken up with worrying about when you're going to get your next drink. Or if you're having drinks, you're somewhere else, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you're not.
Yeah. And I didn't notice it. And I've said this to you so many times. I can't remember if I've said it on this podcast or not, but it didn't sink in for me how lucky I was to have a sober mom until when I was like 17, 18. And mm-hmm. I had my first serious boyfriend mm-hmm. and I went to his house and he had much younger siblings. They were like 7 and 9. Yeah. And his parents were drinking heavily. And I remember hearing his little sister say, like, daddy's drunk, because he was like kind of wasted, like falling over a little bit. And I had this moment of like, they must feel unsafe.
Yeah.
Like it must. And I had never had to think about that ever, because I never, ever saw my dad drinking. He was just gone.
Yeah.
So I had this moment of like, oh my God, what if there was like an emergency in the middle of the night? And you know, you don't have like a sober parent who could like drive you somewhere. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just really hit me. I hadn't thought about it because I never had to.
Yeah.
Like, that was when I really started being like, oh wow, like I'm thankful. And all through my drinking days, I always knew like my expiration date is when I have kids, because I always knew I wanted to be a sober parent like you.
Yeah. I know, it's true. Like, I am. And I think that was another reason why, you know, of all the things in my dysfunctional marriage, the drinking thing was the real line. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let you guys witness that. It's because I grew up with it. And it really does. You feel unsettled and unsafe in your home when you've got a parent who's drunk, right? Mm-hmm. It's unnerving, at least for me as a kid. It was very unsettling and unnerving. And that was just such a line I was never going to cross.
I feel so lucky for it. And I tell everyone who has kids that their kids are so lucky for it. What would you say, Mom, to wrap up? And you've said so many good things already, but like, if someone's listening to this, who's gotten sober, who's a parent who has kids, who's trying to figure out how to navigate these conversations, what would you say?
Well, listen, you know, I always tread really lightly here, because I think every parent has to do the thing that feels right and true for them. So this is just my opinion. It's not going to be right for everybody. Everybody, like, I'm just such a big believer in trust your own gut, right? So if what I say doesn't feel right for you, leave it. But I think just from my own experience being the child of an alcoholic, also being an alcoholic myself and raising children, I am a firm believer in talking openly about your experience with alcohol, you know, about what it does, about why you made the decision to quit drinking. And I think it's always powerful to talk about it. Knowledge is power, right? Mm-hmm. And it squashes the shame button around it, right? And the secretive aspect of it. And I think because secrets breed shame. And so I think talk openly about it with your children. And if your kids do drink, and the other thing, I'll just say this one last thing that my dad used to say all the time, right? You know, if somebody is in the throes of like a terrible circumstance, they're kind of at their worst at that particular time in their life, he would always say, it's not the end of the story. And so, you know, if you're, you know, we tend to get fixated on what's happening in this moment and, oh my God, and, you know, think it's, we're locked in this place forever. And I think if your kids do end up drinking and if they are struggling, it's not the end of the story. And, you know, so don't panic and don't keep your kid locked there in this moment, the way that you're seeing them in that particular moment. So not the end of the story, and be willing to keep the conversation open with no judgment, no demands, just open, honest conversation about what alcohol's actually doing. Like, how are they feeling? Are they having a lot of anxiety? Are they feeling a lot of shame? Why are they choosing to drink? I think if you can have the conversations without the expectation that they have to change, then they come to it. They will come to it on their own, right? And you get to be a great role model. Keep being a role model of what's possible, of what a sober life looks like. I think that's the best gift you can give to your kids.
Yeah, I love that. It's not the end of the story. I wasn't expecting this episode to be so emotional, but
it's funny.
Yeah, mom. And like, I have no advice to give as someone who has never had kids. I'm not going to pretend to know anything about parenting until I've done it. But like, I can speak to being a kid with a sober parent and like how that's the best thing, especially if your kid drinks and struggles with drinking.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing better you can do for them. Yep. Than staying sober and being a sober person they can go to. And like, we say this a lot, possible. But yeah, that's what I was about to say. We say this a lot, but you modeled living a sober life for us and someone who like you didn't, I don't know. I just feel like you never let it define you. You never stayed in any sort of, you never had any sort of victim mentality about it. You spoke about it in a very empowering way. You lived your life in a very empowering way where you didn't let it like stop you from doing things. And even just that, like we witnessed that growing up. And I think that's reflected in how all of my sisters and I view sobriety. We've always viewed it as like a positive thing. That's like, good. Yeah. So nice there's, there's a lot of power in just being a sober parent for sure. Thanks. Oh, this was so good, Mom. I'm glad we talked about this one today.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Thanks everyone for listening. Maybe one day, and if you're listening and you'd want to do this, let me know, but maybe one day we could do a Q&A episode together, Mom. I've done a couple solo Q&As.
Yeah.
We could do a you and me Q&A. And then if people have more questions about parenting, sober, or just anything, that would be a fun one. Yeah. Oh, I love that idea. Okay, let's make that one happen soon. But in the meantime, thank you everyone for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then feel free to share it with a friend or share it on social media. And if you're enjoying the podcast, then be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Subscribe to my weekly newsletter at happiestsober.com. And you can always sign up for my sober support group, the Happiest Sober Hub. And this is officially the last month to book your spot on my sober trip to Croatia. Booking closes at the end of March. So super excited for that one. But thank you, everyone. New episodes come out every Tuesday. So we'll chat with you next week. I hope you have an amazing week. Remember that life's happiest when you're
sober.
Thanks, Mom. Love you.
Okay, love you too.
Addiction impacts all of us. Addiction's consequences run through all of us. From ourselves to our loved ones and through our communities, addiction creates so much loss and grief. My name is Dwayne Osterlin, and I'm the host of the Addicted Mind podcast, a show featuring personal stories, expert guests, and vital information about addiction and addiction recovery. We'll talk with leading treatment providers to discuss the latest research and treatment options for this devastating disease and advocate for mental health awareness. We discuss topics like the importance of creating a community of support to helping loved ones to some of the latest research on psychedelic medicines. The Addicted Mind podcast has been about creating hope, listening to stories of many amazing people that have overcome addiction and are thriving. If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, subscribe to the Addicted Mind podcast wherever you get your podcasts or check out theaddictedmind.com. New episodes every Monday. See you there.